Are you thinking about adding more children to your family? Maybe you're planning for a certain age gap or trying to figure out if you're done or not. Maybe you're already pregnant and needing advice on how to prepare other children for a new baby. In this episode, we break down the myriad of factors to consider when deciding to add more children or not, what a subsequent pregnancy is like when you're already taking care of other older children, how to prepare them for birth if they're going to be present, and pro tips to aid in the integration of a new member of the family. This one is filled with practical advice. Let's go.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. All right. So today I'm going to be interviewing you, Dr. Morgan, all about adding more children to the family. And speaking of that, I'm pregnant with my second and feeling so sick. So I'm just not going to be as active of a participant today, but you have so much to share and tell us with your four children and all of the fun things that come with that. So let's just dive right in on adding kiddos to our family.
Yeah. And I'm very sorry for you and how badly that you feel. And I mean, I know the listeners, well, some of them have been there and some of them haven't. And if you've never been really nauseous with your pregnancies, you know, congratulations and very happy for you.
So happy for you.
No one would ever wish this on their worst enemy. But I do have to just say, you will forget it. You will. You will one day look back on this and be like, you know, I don't know. Like, I remember it was bad, but I just don't remember it like viscerally in my gut in the way that you do right now. And you're living in it. Yeah. And it's just every day, right, every moment.
Right now, it feels like I could never do this again. And that's probably something that people bring up with adding more kids to the family, because I think our decision to do that sort of differs on where we are making that decision, right? If it's like newly postpartum or whatever. So let's just dive into that, like deciding to add more or not, feeling done. How do you know? Because I really thought before I got pregnant this time that I was definitely going to have more. If we could, we have one more embryo for sure. And now I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like that with postpartums. I feel like if somebody could hand me a 5-month-old baby, I would have like 10 kids. But I just cannot. I mean, four is a lot of kids anyways, but I just can't. And that's kind of the reason why we were having a hard time deciding on having the fourth, is because the postpartum for me is so hard. And it's like every day, every moment of every day feels, obviously there's some positives and things here and there, but there's so many difficulties too and challenges. And, you know, so for you, it's this beginning of pregnancy that you really, really dislike. For me, it's the postpartum. Everybody's usually going to have their thing. But when it comes time to adding more children, I think that one thing that is important to know and remember is that these are like acute, small, short phases of this intense difficulty, and it will pass. It will end at some point. And that is usually what happens too. When, you know, your oldest child gets to be around like 18 months, it seems like it's been long enough now. We've forgotten how hard pregnancy could be, or birth, or the early postpartum. And then an 18-month-old, there's nothing sweeter in the entire world than a sweet, like running around little toddling baby that is starting to talk and notice the world. And they are just so joyous and sweet. And that's usually when people get pregnant again. They're like, let's do it again. So I, you know, we're, and in terms of the decision, like this is a point that I wanted to talk about, because people ask me all the time how to decide if I want to have more kids, and especially what do we do when one partner wants more and the other doesn't. And I think, you know, obviously this is not something I'm going to be able to tell anyone. It's a totally a personal decision. I do just want everybody to though keep in mind that the time period of building the baby and that early, even if it's 1 year of real difficulty of, you know, that just 0 to 12 month old, in the grand scheme of your life, it's really like about 2 years, because you're almost pregnant for a year. I mean, let's just be honest, right? Like 9 months, 10 months is almost a year. So it's like 2 years of your life in a blip. And let's imagine that we live to be like 80. Okay, 2 years where you're going to have this relationship with with that person for like 40 years before you pass, or whatever, however the time period is going to be. you know, it's like, those are sorts of the trades that I try to look at. It's like a 10,000 foot view. We have to sort of zoom out. Okay, right now this feels really hard and really awful. Also though, balancing that with knowing our limits. Like, I can tell in myself, my body type is just a very big energetic dumper. Like, I make bigger babies and I make tons of milk and I have a very fast metabolism and lots of energy goes out in my personality and with my body type too. And I really do try to stay conscious of conserving some of my chi and that type of life force, vital energy. I do think that some women are like the Mother Goose body type, where they can just continue to have so many babies. They just don't really seem all that depleted by it. You know, physiologically, what's going on there? I don't know. It's a constitutional thing. Mm-hmm. If anyone's familiar with Ayurveda, they are more like kaphic mother mm-hmm. types. So they're kapha, whereas you and I are more vata. Mm-hmm. And it's more difficult on our bodies. It's more difficult on our overall, that sort of like chi concept. I know it's mm-hmm. this is all kind of abstract, but anyways, so we're balancing lots of things when we're trying to figure out if we're going to have more kids. First of all, like logistics, and that includes finances, and does our partner want one, and do we have a big enough house and car? And sometimes the ideas of like house and car can feel like these petty little decision makers, where it's like, okay, you're balancing this huge idea of adding like another person to the world and family, and like, surely we can make it work, right? With like a different mm-hmm. family. A different house or a different car. But it's like, well, I mean, yeah, I would like to think that. And at the same time, it is a privilege to be able to make those sorts of financial leaps and jumps and just go for it and change your house or change your car or whatever it is. And not everybody has that ability. So trying to be sensitive to all of those things, especially in light of this modern day inflation and everything. Then there's this idea of how do you feel and how has your recovery been? And then what about age gaps? And what about all these different things? So of course, this is a completely individual process. How do you know when you're done? Like, say, let's say you have a couple of kids and you're not really sure and you feel like, oh my gosh, I don't know. I think that if you are not sure, then your answer is no.
Right.
Not done. Like, if you're not sure, then you're sort of saying yes in a way.
It's
you know,
it's not a heck
yeah.
No, it's a no. Yes.
If it's not an F no, it's an F yes. Like, you know what I mean? It is. It's like, in a lot of ways. And I do think there's going to be some people who sit in that space where they're just like, I really don't know what I want. Now, I don't know if we can do it is a different question. But if you're mm-hmm. trying to figure out what do I want, and there's any kind of an inkling that you're sort of like, well, I kind of do. And then maybe sometimes you're like, well, but then I kind of don't or whatever. But if you are sort of thinking about it, if you have another baby on your heart, that is usually your answer. And now mm-hmm. some time maybe go by and maybe situations change and then you kind of decide, no, like actually we're great. We're complete. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's going to be some women who never get that complete feeling and they just have always, you know, they love having babies and they love this time period and it's always going to feel like this sort of sad, melancholic thing, but they have to make a logical, rational decision because at some point we have to be done, right? Like,
yeah,
not just keep going.
Forever and ever.
Or maybe their bodies choose for them, right? And then they're just reaching the age where it's not going to be possible anymore or something. Mm-hmm. So for me, I just in my own personal experience, I know that you're not like in this yet. And I think that once your son is here, you will at some point, probably when he's like 18 months, you'll start to feel back open to these things. Although postpartum for you has historically been great. So maybe it won't, yeah. You know, you love
and little babies. And of one, but yeah. I hope it's like that again. And by the way, I'm eating because I will die if I don't.
Yep. Eat all you want.
So I apologize. I know you'd be like, why can you not have 1 hour of your life without eating? And you would think that, but today's been really hard. So the fact
sorry.
That I'm even eating is great. So yeah, I think the other thing to just bring up, which we're talking about adding more children, but some people even who are going through infertility might have to mm-hmm. make the decision that they're just not going to keep trying. You know, so that's another factor sometimes for people
100%.
Of like they're trying and trying and trying, maybe going through IVF, fail, 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 miscarriage, miscarriage, miscarriage. And sometimes, you know, we feel that urge to like just keep going and keep trying and keep trying. And sometimes people get to a point where they're like, you know what, I'm either good with the one child that I have or the two children that I have or maybe no children, or they finally come to the point of adoption or something else. So it's like it's so personal and it can change, like maybe what you want 2 years ago might be different than what you end up wanting later. So I just wanted to add that too, because I see that a lot in my practice of a different kind of decision that must be made because they maybe want the child but can't conceive them.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Something I didn't think of. So thank you for adding that. And then on a similar vein, even if somebody's not going to necessarily go down some kind of a reproductive assistance technology, like there may be a plan that they're going to have another baby and then they just don't end up, you know, conceiving and they wanted mm-hmm. more and it's just not happening.
So when it comes to planning though,
yeah.
If you have the ability, whether you conceive easily or maybe you are like me where you've gone through IVF and I can kind of pick when the next baby comes, tell us about age gaps because I get asked that question a lot. Like what is the ideal time to space more kids?
Yeah. So I think there's two main veins of thought here in a medical or health perspective, which would be that the children are born at about a 3-year gap or that you are getting pregnant again when your oldest or whatever, that other child above, you know, I guess it would be your youngest baby is 3 years old. So then you would have more of like a 3-year, 9-month type gap, almost 4-year gap.
Wow.
So either like a 3-year or a 4-year gap. So the 3-year gap where it's you're spacing your children so that they are about that age difference. So that means getting pregnant again when that baby's like 2 years, 3 months, something like that, is sort of based off of postnatal depletion statistics, right? And but this also depends on how long you've been nursing and all kinds of different things and how well you feel and whatever. But in terms of a health perspective, there's that vein, or the TCM, the traditional Chinese medicine perspective, is the one where it's you get pregnant once you've had a 3-year gap from the birth of your last child. So then their age gap is going to be closer to 4 years old. And I mean, obviously, there are going to be a lot of different variations here. People are going to have Irish twins, which is where there's two babies born in the same year, or they're going to have 18-month gap. That's a very, very common thing. 18-month gap is usually where people are getting pregnant again when their baby is like 9 or 10 months. And then – isn't that nuts? I know. It sounds so crazy. Wait, am I right about that? Yeah, it's like 10
– Yeah.
10 months?
Yeah.
Something like that. And, you know, feeling really good. They love having a baby. And then they're like, let's do this whole really short gap thing. And there's so many benefits to that later on. It's just going to be like a really intense younger years, that first year, namely, of like having the – baby toddler and a newborn. But people do it all the time. And then I feel like probably the very, very most common is the 2-year gap. People have like right around a 2-year gap. And it's, I mean, like I was talking about the mother goose type constitution, some women are going to have those shorter gaps and feel completely fine. And some women are going to need a lot longer of a gap. And we obviously don't have a crystal ball or the ability to time travel. And so you're just going to make the decision that you're going to make, and you're kind of going to deal with how it goes afterwards. There are pros and cons to all of these, of course. And I think one thing that people think about is that they wonder if their children will be close, like friends, if they have too big of a gap. And I just, from my own personal experience, having a boy and a girl as my first two that were 3 years almost exactly to the same day, I really thought that it was going to be too big of a gap. Because I'm like, okay, when he's 4, she's 1. Like, what is a 4-year-old going to do with a 1-year-old? What is a 5-year-old going to do with a 2-year-old? But let me tell you, they are best friends. They are the best of friends. Now, I also have 2 girls that are 22 months apart. So that seems like the situation where you'd breed besties, right? Like, same sex, less than 2 years apart. Like, it should be fine. And they fight so much because they are friends sometimes, but personality is huge here. So we can have the ideal gaps and whatever, whatever. And it's like your kids may not relate to each other at all. And that is true of them as adult children as well. So it's not something that we're going to be able to influence all that much. We try with, you know, the way we handle our sibling rivalries and things like that. But otherwise, largely as they grow up, these two individual people or however many kids you have, that when they grow up and they become adults, they're going to have their own individual relationships and experiences of each other. And we as parents cannot really overthink that too much. It's just, we have to do what we can do. And it is what it is, right? Like, it's the best that we can manage. And we just did the best that we could in that kind of a situation. So I would say, like, somewhere getting pregnant in the second year of your baby's life is a good marker. Second or third year, right? I mean, somewhere in there. But if you're also 38 and you're having your first child, maybe you need to have that shorter gap, or you're 40 having your first child, you're going to have to kind of bam them out. And that's okay. That's just what you have to do now, you know? If we had the ideal though, I would say that, like somewhere in the getting pregnant around two and a half, three, somewhere in there, because usually women have weaned for a while. I do actually really suggest weaning before getting pregnant again. Mm-hmm. Some women will not do this. They will get pregnant while they're still nursing. They will even tandem feed. Again, I feel like those are kind of the outliers, the people that feel good doing that in their bodies. Most, I would say, very much benefit from having a break where you're not pregnant and you're not nursing of at least, like, let's say 6 months, something like that, where you can have this body autonomy. You can do maybe some health checks and do mm-hmm. some kind of a detox or any protocols where you're taking supplements and herbs and things that would not be appropriate to in your breastfeeding or pregnant. And mm-hmm. so it's sort of this like little pit stop. Like imagine your race car going around and around the track and you just never stop and take care of the car. Like we mm-hmm. need to kind of stop and take care of the car sometimes. Yeah. Some women's race cars though are built differently and they're just sturdy and they go forever and they're the Volvo of the race car or something. And mm-hmm. they're around forever, but some of them are the cheap little Kia and they need some help too. And that's me. Mm-hmm. That is me. I need some help.
Yep. Yeah. And I think it's like looking to other people to see what they did and putting that on you doesn't work. You know, if you have a sister-in-law or a friend or whatever who breastfed and got pregnant and it was fine, it's like, that doesn't mean that that is the right thing to do or that you need to do that because everyone is so different. And me personally, in my experience of patients and friends and family, people seem more stressed out in my experience when the age gap is a little closer together when they have young children. And it's because it's not just you're depleted, but you're also taking care of like two babies, which just demands different things of you. And, you know, when your kids are older, if you can space it out a little bit, they don't demand as much of you. So it's not only just nutritionally demanding, but also every other way demanding, right? Yeah. When they're like really little. And, you know, people who do it just do it and they get through it, but it can be a really intense time. So if you have the choice, you know, people ask me that all the time, what's the best gap? So there's a lot to consider there for sure.
Yeah, great point. It's like your everyday moments are, you know, day in and day out. If you have a 15-month-old or an 18-month-old or something like that, and you're managing a newborn, like it's just going to be a different game. Mm-hmm. There will be benefits later on. Maybe you'll be able to have your two kids in the same soccer team or in the same mm-hmm. classes or whatever it is because they're so close in age that they can be, and that has huge benefits. So there is a lot to consider, like you're saying. So a couple of other additional points I wanted to bring up here because I had done a Instagram question box for this particular episode a couple of weeks ago. By the way, if you don't follow us on Instagram, our handles are in the show notes, and we are constantly always asking for feedback about the podcast and episode request ideas and different questions for particular episode ideas that you can get your questions answered here. So just know that we are really active there and taking everything into consideration. So one question mm-hmm. that was asked to me is, how long should you wait to space your children if you've had a C-section? Mm-hmm. And this is really important. If you're wanting to have a VBAC, what they say is that you should wait so that the children are at least 2 years apart, mm-hmm. at least. And ideally, it's you not even really getting pregnant until that first child is about two. But that's a little bit farther. I would say most surgeons, though, and doctors, OBGYNs, will say at least there needs to be a two-year gap so that we know that your suture, your wound, the scar, everything has healed really well and properly so that we can then reduce the risk of abruption. So like a uterine abruption where the uterus basically like would tear or come apart at that suture line, which is extremely rare in general anyways, but as a precaution, they want to say that there's at least like a 2 year gap. Somebody also asked me what number of additional children was the hardest for me? 0 to 1, 1 to 2, 2 to 3, or 3 to 4. And I would say 0 to 1. 0 to 1 rocked my world. And I know that's not what I think most people would say, but I feel like I had my huge, we've talked about this idea on other podcasts before, but I had my big like death of my old self in that first year of his life. Mm-hmm. Like I think I'm one of those type A's, used to be much more type A than I am now, but back in the day I was, and really kind of a control freak and had the experience in my life leading up till that point of having a lot of influence over the way that my life went. And if I wanted something, I just tried harder and then I would get it. And if I I would work harder, I would try harder or whatever it was. And I sort of felt like I knew how to play the game. And I was like, cool, this is great. Like
I am the master of everything.
Yeah. Like, well, it was just like, whatever, you know, I was very academically competitive with myself. And anyway, it is not like that when you have children. And I got pregnant very easily. I loved being pregnant. Like everything was, again, it was tracking along with my history of like, things are great for me. Like
everything is awesome. Yeah. Everything is cool when you haven't had a baby.
Yeah. Everything is cool when you're really naive and you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, exactly. And so then out he came, and all my really stringent plans to like breastfeed and cloth diaper and all of these things that I wanted to do in the crunchy natural world were starting to fall apart before my eyes with all of our breastfeeding issues. And it was like wigging me out. And then it wigged me out continually for the first like year of his life. So that was really hard. I had been a nanny like you for many years in college, and you were doing it in high school as well. And I didn't really like kids in high school, actually, other people's kids. I knew I wanted to be a mom, but I was like not interested. But then something in college clicked. Actually, you know what it is? I got off birth control. When I got off birth control in college, everyone first of all thought I was going to be pregnant. And I was like, you guys, shush. But second of all, my brain, like the maternal instinct clicked on so strongly. I could not.
Of course it did. Because that's the whole point. And why so many women don't want kids, because they're on birth control.
It's really so, so serious and so strong. Mm-hmm. So anyway, then I became very maternal, started nannying, kind of got into this weird niche of nanning all these twins in Fort Collins. And it was fun. But because of that, again, I'd had this experience of, well, I nanny twins. Like, I'm going to have a baby. It's going to be easy, easy peasy. The things we don't know and you don't know. So anyway, for me, I would say 0 to 1 was the hardest. 1 to 2. So adding my daughter, again, with that 3-year gap, was legitimately easy. And I know that sounds banana pants, but for me, because I had such low expectations of how poorly my postpartum was going to go. I mean, I really wanted it to be different, but I was like just preparing for, you know, hell on earth again, basically. And recurrent.
Anything was better than the very bottom.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was like, come on, we'd only up from here. Like, and her postpartum was my best of the four. So it was such a huge swing. It was like the worst of the worst to the best of my experiences overall in motherhood. Although at the time I obviously didn't know that, but I did recognize that it was a huge, like hugely enjoyable. And I felt like it was so redemptive too, because I was able to experience a newborn again in a way where I was like enjoying her and loving her. And I wasn't in constant pain, and I knew what to do, and I knew how to get the help that I needed, and like all these different things. It was so amazing. I was literally on like an oxytocin bliss high for 2 weeks, and it was really awesome. Also, the 3-year-old was in a preschool 2 days a week. He was potty trained. He was like able to be alone for a few minutes while I tended to her. Like, it was just a totally smooth transition that kind of a way. He never really showed signs of jealousy. He wasn't interested in her that much, but he was always like nice to her, you know, stuff like that. So then 2 to 3, that's the 22 month gap between my girls. That was very hard. I was still nursing my second daughter when I got pregnant with my third daughter. Nursed for like the first 10 weeks of that pregnancy. And then my milk just completely dried up and I was in pain anyways. Like every time she latched, it was horrible. I was like, this is awful. I can't do this anymore. But I was trying to kind of wean her slowly. So anyways, that I think I had no gap. Like I'm saying, I was not practicing what I preach. I thought, okay, well, we just moved back to Idaho. My husband was traveling back and forth to California for work still, and I wasn't going to be able to work as a naturopathic doctor here with him traveling so much and us having little kids. So we were like, let's just bang out that third one. We thought we were going to only have 3 kids. Let's bang out that third one kind of quick and then be done with it, you know? And so I got pregnant when the second one was 13 months. So then they ended up 13 months apart.
That's crazy.
It was really crazy.
I can't imagine it.
I know. In retrospect, I was like, what am I doing? And it was the whole world shut down the same week that I found out I was pregnant. And I was like, okay, here we go with the pandemic, you know, which didn't affect me too much, but I was already underweight. And then of course with nursing her. So through that pregnancy, I really just like didn't gain that much weight. And I honestly didn't even notice that I didn't gain that much weight until basically the end. And I was like, wow, I've only gained like 35 pounds. Whereas with my son, I gained with both my first two pregnancies, I gained 45 pounds. And I was kind of like, huh, okay. Like I wonder, you know, and then she came the third one, 2 pounds less than them at birth, and just has always been really small. But she was also a very, her personality type, like she just didn't sleep. She was very like nervous energy, really ramped up, kind of like sympathetic nervous system stuff. So that postpartum was hard in a way because I, first of all, she was not as easy of a baby. But second of all, I felt very bad. I felt really guilty about trying to do the resting that is so needed in postpartum when my second daughter was only not even 2 years old. Yeah. Like she was still such a baby in that way. Like she wanted me and she needed me and I like couldn't tend to her. And so, you know, I would, my husband obviously was, but it just, I could hear her out in the living room crying for me and it broke my heart. And so I didn't really do all the things that I should have done postpartum. So that transition was really hard. Then,
which is where the age gaps are important.
Yeah. And that, yeah. And I was
just
like,
I hear. Yeah. That people are like, I have two babies. It's very different taking care of two babies that need you.
Yep. It's like two babies that have different needs, though. Yeah. Because, like,
not like twins.
Yes. Exactly. It's like almost harder and weirder in that way. It's not, but I mean, it has some similarities. Anyway, and then 3 to 4, was a really restful postpartum and still a hard transition because of her. She had like, you know, the reflux, laryngomalacia, all that kind of stuff. But I think I would rate it number 2 on my postpartum scale. I would say Savi's was the easiest, then Slende, then Sloan, then Gage. But anyway, so that I just wanted to answer that question. And then I also now wanted to talk, and you can talk about this too, is how is being pregnant different the second time around than it is the first time around when you're having a baby or any subsequent time. You know, the first time you're pregnant, you're just a single person in the world and able to take a nap maybe more often or be slower about your days, be more conscious, be more intentional, et cetera. But once you already have children and then now you're pregnant, you are not able to do those kinds of things as easily or at all. And it's a lot more tiring. And so, you know, if you can nap when those older children are napping, that's a great idea during that pregnancy because, you know, that's going to be your only chance in the daytime to do it. And now if you work and you can't do it during the week, then maybe on the weekends, you're trying to catch up on some extra sleep because sleep and resting are still very, very important in pregnancy. That need does not stop, does not go out the door just because you do have other children to take care of. So while it's more difficult to manage and finagle it, like maybe you're going to bed with them at night, like you're going to bed at 7:30 or something like that. You need to get that sleep. So it's going to be a temporary period of time that you have to make these kinds of changes. But what has been your experience of being pregnant now a second time around?
Yeah, well, so I was really sick with AV too. And you say that we're going to forget, but I didn't forget with her. I was actually really nervous to be pregnant. The reason I was holding on to the hope that I wouldn't be as sick because I'm having a boy and not a girl. But that ended up not being the case. But with AV, exactly like you said, I just kind of lounged around all the time. I actually kind of semi-closed my practice right before I got pregnant. I just basically told all my patients, like, I'm not seeing patients for 3 months. Like, if you need somebody in that time, like, see this doctor. Like, I'll be coming back my second trimester, but I'm taking, like, a maternity leave for my first trimester because I was so burned out at that time. I had a completely full practice and was just exhausted, and I did not want to risk losing the baby. You know, we had gone through IVF and all of our fertility stuff. So it was actually a blessing in that way because it was the only time I actually rested in my whole life because, you know, we just worked so hard in school and starting practices and doing all the things. So in a way, I kind of loved it because although I was so sick and miserable, I just got to lie around and rest. And so it helped a lot. And now being sick the second time, I've done a similar thing where I pulled back more on work, even though I still have work things. But it's not like I feel I have the same ability to rest like I did with her because I have her. But I do try to plan naps around her nap time and things like that. But it is so much harder. I mean, even just today, I was so sick. I threw up this morning. I had to go pick her up from preschool. I'm like, haven't hardly eaten anything. I'm driving around trying to figure out what to eat. I have to get her in and out of the car seat like 3 different times to go different places. And I'm like about to vomit all over. Like I almost threw up in the grocery store. And I'm like, this is so hard. And she's like whining because she's tired and she needs to get home for her nap. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so hard. Like I have this very real struggle and need that is happening because I'm pregnant, but I have to take care of her and make sure, you know, I like rush her home to get her to go down for her nap as I'm like holding back a vomit, you know? And it's just different when you have kids because you have to take care of them and your needs kind of come second in a way. And that's challenging because the pregnancy doesn't care like that you have another child to take care of. So it is challenging for that for me.
Oh my gosh. And those moments when everything accumulates and like you have a need, they have a need. It's sometimes with the, I mean, having four is like, it is nuts. And sometimes when they are all asking me, this is how often I'll have a peak moment. I call them these like peak moments in the day where I feel like I want to explode because the 8-year-old is like trying to tell me some story about like a baseball player. And then the 5-year-old is like trying to make me repeat what I said to the 8-year-old because she didn't hear and she doesn't understand. Like maybe it's some kind of a term. She doesn't understand. She wants to understand. So she's asking me questions about it as I'm like talking to him. Then the 3-year-old is like on a loop, like a broken record. Can I have a snacky? 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 And then the baby's like crying in the background. And I'm like,
oh my God,
I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. And it's like what you're saying. Like I can totally visualize you trying to like pick up your heavy daughter and put her in a car seat and she's whining and you're like about to puke and you're like 8, you're like trying to talk to her and be kind about it, but you're still just getting like so annoyed and frustrated.
Yeah. Oh, I thought about you today as I walked up the stairs, so nauseous, getting ready to record this, and I hear Avi crying because she needs to go potty and she doesn't want Mike to take care of her, so I had to go back. And I'm like, this is crazy. These are the moments in the hard times where we're talking about where I'm like, I can't imagine that you have 4 kids. Like, how are you alive? This is so hard. But then, you know, there's other times where you probably look around and you're like, I'm so grateful that I have these 4 kids. But it is challenging. And this is when we're talking about the decision to add more kids. It is kind of dependent on the day, right? Of like making the whole
decision. It really is. And it's such a good point because I feel kind of unique sometimes in that, like, because not all women feel like I do, or they don't express it. I don't know. But I feel like I'm pretty verbal about how hard I think it is. Like I do feel like it's very, very, very hard. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe because I'm a 7 on the Enneagram, I don't like challenging things, but I do. I like challenge, you know, think about the rest of our, the way that we needed to perform academically in high school and then college and then medical school in order to become where we are right now. Like, obviously I'm up for that kind of a challenge, but it's a different way. That was all under my control of my umbrella. And I think the thing, about kids is that they are so not controllable and it really tests your like being in the moment and being in that flow, the sort of yin. I think you and I both kind of tend to be more yang, which is that masculine, our energy in that way, like, or we can ramp up into it and kind of have almost a pathological expression of that way where we want things just so and da 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 whatever. But it is, we also have the feminine yin to us as well, of course, as mothers. And you really need to lean into that when you have so many. But also one thing I will say about adding children, which is, this is going to sound so dumb and so obvious, but I really want you all to remember this because it is hard for me even sometimes to still think about this, is that time goes on and they get older. Like you were saying, like if you have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old right now and you're trying to think about, am I going to have a 3rd? By the time you were to get pregnant and then that baby to be born, you would probably at least have a 3 and a 5-year-old. So that's different. That's a different situation from where you're at right now. And we always have to remember too about kids and developmental leaps and developmental changes and phases and stages is that it's like, say they're going through something super challenging. It's probably only going to last a couple months. And I know that sounds really like a long time when it's something that's super hard, but in the end of the day, it's only a couple of months. And to not make a choice, a very life changing, altering choice, because of the way that something feels so hard right now is sometimes maybe just a little short-sighted. Like we need to be able to have this perspective that, and I think that is the gift of having multiple kids, is that I do know how fast it goes. First of all, now I know how exactly how fast it goes. And every single time I pick up my baby, she's 5 months, 5.5 months now. And I'm just like, what is happening? Like, I honestly feel like time is on double speed. Like she's kind of got like swollen bottom gums, like about to get her first tooth. And I'm just like almost in tears about it. Like, how did this happen? Like, what is happening? You know, so anyway, I'm really trying to be grateful and present in that moment. I also really am leaning into my older kids. So it's really can be different in that way. And somebody always told me too, that four kids is kind of the tipping point where after four kids, it's all the same. or after three kids, it's all the same, really. Like if you're going to have three, you might as well have four, because by the time you have that fourth, the oldest one is usually old enough to be like pretty helpful. So there's all these kinds of dynamics that we need to keep in play.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Did you know that 97% of women in the US take a prenatal supplement, yet 95% plus are still deficient in key nutrients? My favorite prenatal is from a company called Needed, because they dose nutrients at levels to not just meet the bare minimum as most prenatals do. They actually use form of nutrients and dosages that allow mama and baby to thrive. Needed actually approached me years ago and asked me if I could help them design the perfect prenatal, because they knew that the current prenatals available were not actually helping women. We spent over 3 years diving into the research and understanding what practitioners are seeing and what women actually need at this important season before we formulated this amazingly supportive option. It's no wonder over 4,000 practitioners now recommend Needed, something I am very proud of. If you have followed me for a while, you know that prenatals and optimizing nutrients starts long before pregnancy, so no matter where you are along your fertility or motherhood journey, Needed is the brand I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, back to the show.
But anyway, back to being pregnant with having other kids, So there's some things that we can do during our pregnancy to prep our children for the idea of a sibling coming. And I wanted to talk about some of those tips and tricks, because this is an important transition. And so I want everyone to think of this analogy, because it really helped me when I was adding the second into our family. We don't know that this is exactly how it is for every child, but you have to imagine we are their world, right? Like they look to us as our parent, as their parents, as everything. And kind of like maybe the way that we look to our partner as like everything, right? We're like, we love you, you're our everything, whatever. Or in a way where you have this very strong attachment and bond to them. And what if your partner were to just come home one day with another wife or another husband? and they love them equally just as much as you. And they kissed them and hugged them and told them in front of you how much they love them and hugged you over them sometimes.
Oh my God, I've never thought about this.
Yes, and expected you to just like be okay with it. and not complain and not have any feelings about it. And just be like, yep, this is, oh, and they're never leaving. Oh, by the way, they're never leaving. This is your new sister wife, basically. Or whatever.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I've never thought about it, but that's so true.
And that's what it must be like for a kid, right? I mean, we don't know, but it's something similar to that, where there is this huge shift that has happened and this new person comes into their world and they see their parent who's been doting on them and loving on them now having those same feelings about somebody else. And it's like, what is going on here?
Whoa.
No, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's important for us to understand that and to expect, just expect it. And if it doesn't happen, then whatever, cool. But expect your kid to have a very, very hard time when the new baby comes home. Also, a lot of children perceive that the changes are already happening during your pregnancy. And you will notice sometimes, if we're being very perceptive, and in most cases, I would say, that children begin to act out and have these big feelings during the pregnancy even. Because there's little slight things we say. We say, oh, mommy can't pick you up anymore because I'm pregnant. I have the baby in my belly. Or, oh, I can't do that. Or I need you to do this or whatever because I got the baby. The baby's coming. And, oh, we're going to move your room because the baby's coming. You know, they can change. They sense that all these things are happening because this baby is coming. And I don't think that we need to shield them from those moments, because they're real and true. And it's only going to, you know, be elevated once the baby is here. So don't like necessarily try to not say those things, but just also be expecting of big feelings, emotional tantrums, breakdowns, behavior that is not ideal, whatever, and know that, okay, one, these are little kids who have underdeveloped brains. So they're not trying to be manipulative. They're not trying to be like mean about it or whatever. They're just having a lot of expression. They don't know how to say it. They don't have emotional regulation, blah, 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 all those things, right? So there is a podcast by Janet Lansbury that's called Unruffled, like the feathers of a bird are unruffled. And she talks about this a lot. And I love the Janet Lansbury method of parenting for kids that are like under five. I think it really applies to like 0 to 4, 0 to 5, somewhere in there. I think it's not as applicable for older children personally. But one of the things she always is repeatedly talking about on that podcast, and she'll have these episode titles that where you can kind of search it out, is about the older children acting out starting during the pregnancy, and then also just about introducing siblings. And so check that one out. That'll be in the show notes. And then I think if we can kind of like change some of the things that we say so that it's not really blaming the baby as much, it's maybe just saying that we're feeling tired. We don't want the child to resent this baby before it even comes out, right? So you don't want to say it's always because of the baby, like, but you you can say like, I'm feeling extra tired. I'm working really, my body's working really hard or whatever. And it's implied, you know, you can like rub your belly or whatever, it's implied. But we really want to try to keep them not completely shielded, but also just watch our verbiage a little bit about the way that we say things. So yeah, we just don't want small children to be like, this baby sucks. Like this baby's making my mom sick. Like we want
to be like, that's something I need to remember because Avi keeps seeing me throw up and it's like really scary, I'm sure, to her, even though she's so sweet. She like comes and like rubs my back and stuff. Well, my butt, because she can't reach my back. And I've said a few times because I'm like, I feel really sick. And it's confusing because it's like, well, why do you throw up every day? That's a weird sickness. Maybe she doesn't think so. And sometimes I'm like, I have a baby in my belly, so I feel really sick. But I probably should say just I feel really sick, because then she'll be like, this baby makes my mom throw up. Like, what a terrible thing.
Or, you know, because you do want to have her there for the birth. And for people who are planning on having older children attend a birth too, I think it's really great to start to use the verbiage of like, I'm working really hard. Like my body's working really hard to do this. And so
good. I like that.
Like, yeah. So when you're
like my body is sick.
My body. Yeah.
Yeah. Like not like the baby's making me throw up.
Yeah. It's like my body is working really hard to do this. And so, you know, like I'm puking and, you know, I'm okay. Like I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be great. And I can't wait for you to meet your little brother and it's going to be so awesome. I won't feel like this forever, but it is really hard. And then as you're preparing them for birth too, it's like, mom, like I'm going to be working really hard to get the baby out. It's hard work. And then you watch a lot of videos of labors and births. So I'll get there in just a second. But I wanted to mention, okay, let me just read my notes here for a second. Oh no, actually, yeah, let's just keep talking about that. Okay. So if you are planning on having your older children at the birth, start having them watch birth videos now, all different kinds of birth videos. Obviously you as a parent need to watch them first so that you make sure that there's nothing super traumatic or scary that happens during the birth video. Yeah. But I do think it's important to expose them to videos where the woman is like screaming and then the woman is being quiet or the woman is moaning. And while you are watching the video with your child, your face is calm and confident and unbothered by her reactions in the video. You are just being like, wow, look at how hard she's working. She's screaming. She's making a lot of sounds. I bet sometimes when you're trying to open a jar or whatever, you make some funny faces and some funny sounds because your body's working so hard, huh? Like, isn't it amazing? She's so strong. She's so powerful. Just try to use your verbiage in a way that's going to – because it can be very scary for a kid to watch their mom, especially when they're younger, right? Like I think, you know, a kid under like 3 – who hasn't been prepared well could very well be very, very upset by watching their mom go through labor if they're not adequately prepared on what is to happen and that it's totally normal. Another thing I've talked about with my kids who have attended the births is blood, and it's good blood. Like there will be good blood when the baby comes out and the baby might be covered in blood, or mommy might be like, I don't really refer to myself as mommy. I don't know why I'm doing that. I always say I might have blood coming out of my vagina. And I also use anatomical terms. I think that's something that everybody needs to be doing and should be doing, because it really, research shows that children who grow up knowing the anatomical terms, appropriate factual anatomical terms of their bodies, are much less likely to be like victims of sexual trauma.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'll say like, I'm going to probably have blood coming out of my vagina. And then there's going to be this big thing that comes out after the baby. It's called the placenta. And so then we'll watch videos on that. And it's also not a one-time conversation. This is something that you're going to do like all throughout your entire pregnancy. You have 9 months to prepare the child for what's mm-hmm. to come. And you can also prepare them for the idea that like, they may not be there when the baby actually comes out, that you know, a friend or an aunt or whoever it is might take them into another room and they'll get to see the baby fresh. But like, if they see you laboring, they won't be shocked.
Yeah.
And also show them videos of kids attending births too, so that you can show them what the other kids are doing in the video. Like they're being quiet, they're being mindful, mm-hmm. they're kind of just watching. And maybe then they go into another room and they watch a show for an hour and then they come back out and they see you and da da da, whatever. We mm-hmm. really need to utilize YouTube for this situation, I think, because there's so much learning that kids get when they can see and they can be prepared for what's to come, even for partners. I mean, for partners, watching videos is huge because they don't necessarily know what it's going to be like. And it's going to be hard for them to watch you in pain too.
Yeah. So, I love that. They're such good tips.
I wanted to say that. And then things that you can say that will help once your baby is here to your child and to the baby. So these are going to seem like two really small things, but I truly think that they help so much. And I forget where I learned these. These are not my own ideas. I don't know. Maybe it was a book or a podcast or something. That when the baby is new, okay, so here's the experience of the older child, is that everything is, well, hold on, I got to change the baby's diaper and then I'll get that for you. Or I'm putting the baby down and then I'll come and I'll get you and I'll, you know, fill your need. You need to wait because the baby's priority over you. And mm-hmm. then I'm going to come and help you. And that gets exhausting for them sometimes. Imagine the new wife comes in and always gets priority. Okay. We don't want that.
I love that analogy. It's so good.
So what we want to say sometimes is even when the baby is not needing anything, you, if you're older, you're holding the baby and the older kid says, Mommy, I need water or whatever. You say, okay, little Johnny, you're talking to the baby. You say, okay, Johnny, I know you want me to hold you right now, but I need to get Susan. What am I thinking of these names?
Johnny and Susan. This is like an old Western.
Okay. I need to go get Susan's water
in the saloon. Yeah.
Go to the salon and get Susan some tap water. Okay. Anyways, so you would like set the baby down and you have that face like you're really talking like as if the baby really understands and you're like, hey, like, sorry. And you're speaking to the baby in earshot of the older kid so that the older kid has this experience of sometimes being prioritized too.
Oh, I love that.
That's the whole point. Yes, they need to feel like they're not the bottom of the rung right now. And it's not that you have to do this all day or even every single day or whatever, but just try to weave it in when you can, especially when you're starting to like perceive and feel that they are getting a little like, you know, they're on that edge. They need a little bit more of that love. So you say, mm-hmm. oh, sorry, Johnny, I'm going to go get Susan something and I'll come right back for you. And the baby's like not even crying, doesn't even know, doesn't even care. You know. Or sometimes maybe you do choose the older child when the baby really does need you and is crying a little bit. And you know that it's only going to take a few seconds. You're going to come back. You're going to attend to their needs. Everything's going to be fine. In addition to that, another one you can do is in earshot of the older child, but not speaking directly to them, speaking to the baby, you say something like really nice about the older child. You say like, Johnny, you have the coolest older sister. Like she's going to teach you all about how to scooter and what dandelions are and how to make a chicken noise and a cow noise. And she is going to be like the coolest older sister. You just wait. I can't wait for you to play with her or whatever it is. You know?
That's so sweet.
It's so sweet. And I feel like it really does boost their confidence that like, and your sort of relationship building at that young age. You're helping them, you're helping the older sister be like, yeah, I am a cool freaking older sister, mm-hmm. like, and I am going to be able to teach my little brother things. Like, how cool is that I get to be the one to show him stuff that he doesn't know about yet? Like, I know about these things and he doesn't know about it yet. Like, I get to do that. And I'm always doing that right now with my 3-year-old because she doesn't show outward signs of jealousy in a really clear and obvious way. But I highly suspect that a lot of the behaviors that we're getting right now are because of it. And mm-hmm. so I'm trying to kind of keep her involved in that sort of a way where I'm like, you know, you are going to be able to teach Sunday about unicorns and mermaids. She doesn't know about those yet. Like, how cool is that? Mm-hmm. And then I, you know, my other daughter, my 5-year-old, and I'm like, and you get to show her how to ride a bike, just like your friend taught you. Like, you can be the one to teach Sunday how to do it and da da da, whatever. And I think it excites them. It gets them involved in it. And it also sort of is starting to plant the seed for like what's to come in this, in the future, that this baby won't always be a baby. Like, one day she's going to be playing with you. One day she's going to be, you know, out there with you. And it's not always going to be this situation where like, we always have to be quiet because of the baby and da da da, whatever.
Yeah, okay. Those are so good. Such good tips.
Thanks.
I learned so much on this podcast. We podcast just for ourselves.
We really do. I was just thinking about laughing about those names. And I'm like, do people, when they listen to this, are they like not expecting – are they expecting us to be more professional? Because that's not the right – you're not here for the right
– as I'm like eating my food in the podcast microphone. It's probably so loud.
No, I haven't heard anything personally, but I don't know. Okay, so now some things to do as the parent. In addition ones, like with your other kids, not necessarily to the other kids, but some other kind of like overarching structures. So one thing that I think that Wes and I made a huge mistake with the addition of our second child, so our daughter, first daughter, was that we, and you have to do this for a period of time, it feels like, but we did it for too long, was the whole like one-on-one man defense, you know, like he pretty much took Gage and did everything for him and with him. And I pretty much took Savi and did everything for her. And it went like that though for 6 months, 8 months. I mean, too long. It was too long where we didn't cross paths enough. Obviously, I still did things for Gage. He still did things for Savi. But I feel like though we each became default parents for the opposite child. And it just needed a little bit more weaving. Like, I wish we would have kind of recognized it was just working very well though and whatever, but it did put a rift in my relationship with him. Not as much between Wes and Savi because she was so young, but between Gage and I, it certainly did. And he and I had gone, I was his default parent before that. And then it really switched. And that has taken, I think it's like actually really changed the trajectory of our relationship for like a long time in a not so ideal way, in my opinion. And it's better now than it was, but I think that there was maybe more hurt with him than I realized at the time. And he didn't really seem to display it. And it was also important though, for him to be able to develop this relationship with his dad in a deeper way. And, I don't know. I who knows? We don't have a crystal ball. That's like always the thing I'm saying, because we don't, we have no idea. We can speculate, but, we've been a lot more conscious now with the addition of the number three and number four being like, we have to, so I have as the mom, because you, this is the kind of unfair thing about having multiple kids is that you are pretty much solely responsible for that newborn. I mean, yes, you can pump and somebody else can feed it a bottle and somebody else can change the diaper. Those are micro moments. Overall, usually newborns really just want to be with the mom. And so it doesn't give you a lot of time to be with the older children. And it has been harder to be more intentional about it these couple of last times, but I'm glad that we have. And one of the ways you can do that is like the one-on-one dates idea is that like, as soon as you really can do it postpartum, that you're feeling good about it, maybe like 8 weeks or something, 12 weeks, you do try to leave the baby for an hour with your partner or whoever so that you can take your older child to like, go to Target and pick out some stuff at the dollar spot or take them to go get some new shoes or go get a cool meal or to a new park or somewhere that is harder to take a baby, like go to a movie. You know, you can't really take a baby to a movie, but like how cool is a movie to like a four-year-old, five-year-old, obviously if it's appropriate, the appropriate kind of movie. Right. Which obviously is a duh, but you know, sometimes you'd be shocked by the things that are advertised as being kids' movies and they're just really not. So date time one-on-one with the older child. This can start to come into play with that younger one once the younger one is like two, you know, and is able to have the concept. But up until that point, you don't really need to do that. So yeah, I just don't advise splitting into two different parents for too long. Because it's just, it's something that in retrospect, I think we can look back on it and say that that wasn't helpful.
Yeah.
Okay. Another little one that I remember my midwife telling me, which was something that I did not, my midwife with my second, which I had not thought about at all. And I think I would have figured this out on my own anyways. But once you have two, let's just assume we only have two and not 3, 4, 5, 6. When you're doing simple things like getting out of the car at a public place, like the park, the grocery store, you sort of have to figure out your systems, like who do you get out first and how, where do you put them and what do you, blah, 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 blah. And so it's like, okay, if you're doing the stroller thing, you get your infant out first because they're like locked into something. You do not get the toddler out and expect them to stand there next to you in a parking lot. You don't get the toddler out and expect them to like sit quietly in the car while you're strapping the baby to your chest or clicking them into the car seat and getting the car seat out of the back, da, 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 whatever. It's just not safety. It's a safety thing, right? Like mm-hmm. we just can't expect them to be able to do these things that they're not able to do. Like they're not mm-hmm. necessarily able to completely listen and stand still and control their bodies and understand the idea and the concept that a car won't run over them. Like they don't know. They don't get backup lights and what does that mean and all yeah. that stuff. So you choose getting the infant out first. And then once you have everything sorted, then you get the toddler out and you have them like, you know, holding your hand or you're holding them and you're pushing the car seat or the stroller with one hand or whatever. Those kinds of little things, I think it's really important to walk through some of this, especially like maybe you're doing drop off at a school and you're like, hey, what am I going to, how am I going to do, you know, and it becomes this a little, takes a little bit of visualization and forethought.
That's also helpful. These are yeah. the things that we should just know as humans, but we don't.
We don't, but hopefully
I would never think about that, but it makes total sense. Once you have two, yeah, I'm sure you probably do figure that out, but I wouldn't have any thought about that.
Right. I mean, yeah, why would you? Of course, no. So it's like, yeah, you're going to have to figure out in your own time, but sometimes you're very tired and not really, your brain isn't really thinking all that well. And it may be something that you just didn't quite think of and you're sort of struggling with this baby or toddler that's almost like running away. And now, you know, oh, wait, actually, why don't I just get the baby out first? Seems so like, does everyone would figure that out on their own? Let me tell you what. No.
Yeah.
No. No. Your brain goes through multiple iterations of fogginess and sleep deprivation and all kinds of things. And it just turns offline sometimes. And you'd think that these logical choices would be the forefront of our minds. And it's just not. We also know that the maternal brain changes very drastically on MRI. Obvious. Every time we have a child for a couple of years, like it changes gray matter to white matter proportions. And I think that's we think at least in science that that's an adaptive mechanism of attunement to our children. And so we are very highly attuned to them and their needs and, almost predicting what they need and want. And it makes total sense that for our species that that would be the case so that we are able to keep them alive, right? Like that makes mm-hmm. sense. We're mammals. So anyway, another one is quiet time activities with an older child while you're like getting the baby down for a nap or things like that. That one is really tricky. And so there's going to be some people who say you don't really want to try to keep your older children quiet all the time because you want the baby to get used to the sound. What I will say to that is yes, to an extent. I would say maybe 20% of your baby's sleep is that kind of a thing, like what they've gotten used to. But I feel like in my experience, like 80% of it is just the way the child is. Mm-hmm. Some children are going to be really great at napping through sound and they don't care and they're not light sleepers and it doesn't wake them up. Some children wake up literally with like the sound of that click as the door mm-hmm. handle is changing, like is like clicking.
Mm-hmm. That's me.
Despite the white noise machines, despite mm-hmm. everything, like it just depends on your kid. And I've had both. Like Sunday is great. She sleeps through lots of noise. Thank goodness. Because she's the fourth. But Sloan, the third, I thought, oh, third baby, like she's going to sleep through everything. No. She was extraordinarily sensitive to the sounds in the house when she was napping. And it was really hard. It was awful. So one thing is to know is that even if it totally sucks in your household during this whole napping situation with your younger children and your baby, this is a temporary time period. It really won't be like this forever. You just sort of have to grit your teeth and get through it. And this is why women are the strongest people in the world. And mothers 100%. Are the strongest people in the world, literally. Like mm-hmm. the amount of BS that we have to deal with all day and challenging scenarios and taking care of and attuning to all of these different people while also getting our needs met, while also getting their needs met, while balancing all of the, you know, the mental load, that concept of the mental load, getting mm-hmm. the laundry done, remembering the school lunch, remembering that, da, 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 it's insane. It's insane. We are super people. So anyway, mm-hmm. Also you can lean into shows. Like I, mm-hmm. you know, here we are being too natural by the doctors telling you, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay for your kid to watch a show for 30 minutes. Like, just get it. If it's going to help you, we have to think about these things in proportion all the time. There's all these factors. I always see these Venn diagrams that are overlapping, and I see pie charts, and it's like, okay, what are the factors and what's happening and where do we find the crisscross intersection of like the best situation or the situation where we can be doing this like optimally. Okay.
Yeah.
One of those is sanity, is the mother having sanity. And if you're putting your, I don't care if it's 18 months old, if putting your 18 month old in front of a show for 30 minutes so you can tend to the baby and get the baby asleep and the 18 month old can be kind of quiet so that you can do that. And then, you know, once the baby's asleep, you take the 18 month old outside with the monitor and you're playing outside and you have the monitor and your baby sleep or whatever, whatever's happening. Although the recommendations are that baby children don't watch shows before 2 years old, that is one of those situations where we just need to be realistic. If you have the type of 18-month-old who will get very engrossed in some kind of like cool sensory bucket or like blocks or a puzzle or whatever, something else, and they don't need a TV, then don't use the TV. Like, yeah, that would be ideal that we don't use the TV. But if your kid isn't like that and you're going to like scream and rage and punch the wall because they keep waking up the baby, then you need to just change that behavior because that's more damaging than the show. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's more damaging to their experience. Yep. And it's you now starting to get pushed into a bad mental emotional state. And I've been there too. I've been in that state of like postpartum rage and depression, and it sucks. It sucks so bad. And all the research also shows that kids having a good, healthy attachment, they need a mother that's present and that is like smiling and happy. And so there is all of these different factors we have to balance. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. Am I saying that your kids are just free to watch 5 hours of television every day? No. Hopefully it's clear that that's not what I'm saying. Use it as a tool though.
Right.
When you need, and it's okay because it's an adjustment. This is this is temporary. This is a short period of time in your life where you're trying to figure things out and your newborn baby changes like every week. And so it's a very dynamic time period in that first like 5-6 months for sure. And it gets a little bit more steady after that. And then maybe you can come up with some better options. Remember too, that when your newborn baby is a 6 month old, that older baby is now, or older child is now 6 months older too.
Yeah.
So they're in a completely different developmental phase. Like 6 months in the time span of a kid, of a child that's under 5 years old is like 10 years in the adult, you know, brain change way, it feels like, and the way that we mature and everything. So I think that it's just something that we need to think about, keep it in mind. And that's all I have for you guys. I just wanted to like
so good
dump as much of the information I could on you and hope that it helps because you're going to be in this phase. And I know there's a lot of other listeners that will be at some point in their life too.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Morgan. You're such a wealth of knowledge. I feel so lucky that I get to learn from you and that everybody else does too, because it shouldn't just be me that gets to hear all your beautiful wisdom. So
thank you. And this is the last episode of season 4.
Oh, yes.
So we will have season 5 coming out in 2 weeks. We're going to take a little 2-week break, get caught back up on things. You're going to stop puking.
I sure hope so. My hair is going to be shorter. It'll be weird. Ooh, I haven't cut my hair in a very long time. Yep.
So
I think subconsciously, if I cut my hair, I'll stop vomiting or something.
maybe you just need a little bit of a lighter head. That's all it is. Problem.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody.
We will see you in 2 weeks.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.